Good morning, and welcome to the first edition of what we hope will be a growing collection of Organization Unbound podcasts. A couple of months ago, I received an intriguing note in my inbox from the Brucana Institute. For those of you who aren't familiar with Brucana, you might know one of its founders, Meg Wheatley, who is a well-known author. She writes about applying living systems theory to organizations and communities. And in 1992, she and several colleagues founded the Brucana Institute to begin putting living systems principles into practice. So I received this note in my inbox announcing that Brucana was celebrating its 20th anniversary. And I expected to read on that, you know, that they would be planning a big party or some other kind of commemorative activity. But instead, I learned that they would be marking this occasion in quite an unconventional way. That the organization would be retreating into a phase of hibernation for an indefinite period of time. So we were quite intrigued with this unorthodox organizational decision and got in touch with Aaron Dunford, a core member of the Brucana team, to learn more. So how did this decision of Brucana's to enter into a space of hibernation come about?
The roots actually start back in the end of 2008, 2009. Rather than just sort of talking about self-organizing systems and communities of practice, we were going to experiment with actually being one. So in 2009, we made a pretty drastic transformation from being a pretty traditional nonprofit organization, you know, with offices and overhead and staff and all that stuff. And we said, why don't we get rid of all of that stuff and sort of like push the responsibility as well as sort of the freedom out into the initiatives that we were partnering with. So, and then have sort of the board of directors be more of a council holding the center with a couple of full-time staff people. That experiment was really interesting, but I think that there was a little more holding of the center that was needed. So throughout the last year, we were kind of noticing that there was this feeling of kind of energy dispersing, and there wasn't really a lot of coherence to the different initiatives and to the different pieces of the system. And we held this really interesting gathering around how do we weave the different pieces of this web together. And it felt really good when we were all together and we were talking about our work and seeing how it interconnected. But then from that point forward, we really didn't have any other critical moments of connection. And so that led us into a conversation around what's the purpose of Brucana? You know, what's the vision of the world that we're working for, and how are we serving that vision? And so we started a process last summer, 2011, to sort of re-examine Brucana's purpose in the world. And as we went through that process, I think it became pretty clear that we needed to kind of significantly reevaluate both for financial reasons as well as kind of the level of energy in the system, including the board of directors, around what was needed from what was being called from us right now. So we came together at the end of last year for a board meeting, and we really felt that what was really needed was a period of rest.
You say you guys are becoming aware of the energy in the system being in a certain place. How did you become aware of that?
I think, you know, when you're working in a dispersed organization physically, like geographically, with people all over the country as well as in other countries, it's hard sometimes to know where people are in terms of their own interests and amount of energy and dedication that they can put into a system. But when we come together physically, you know, we have a chance to sort of check in. And I think that that's what happened for us at the December board meeting, was a chance to sort of see where each person was individually. And I think that some of the people, they've been working at this for a while with Brucana, and there was definitely this feeling of like them needing a rest. And there wasn't a lot of new energy kind of coming in to steward the system. So I think that there was a sense of individual people's feelings of kind of needing a rest. And then from my perspective, like looking at the organization as a entity, as an organism, there was also a sense that the Berkana itself, you know, was needing a period of reflection and quiet. And there'd been a lot of activity and I think less reflection during the whole time that I've been with Berkana.
Can you say more about the idea of feeling that Berkana itself needed a rest? Because that's an interesting difference between, say, people are tired, and if there aren't other people to take over, then that's one thing to say. But to say the organization itself is a living thing that somehow needs this space, how do you process that, think about it, become aware of it?
Well, I mean, it's something that ever since I, you know, first became involved with Berkana, have been aware of, and has been made very clear to me that there's this entity, and this may sound a little strange, but that is called Lady Berkana. And one of our board members one time said that Lady Berkana is the irrepressible spirit of life. And she's sort of like the muse and the incarnation, I guess, of the organization that is Berkana. So a lot of times at these board meetings, we'll kind of talk about that and check in with that. So I think that from my perspective, looking in at the organization and thinking about Lady Berkana and sort of what was needed and what was being called for in the world at this time, there was a sense that, you know, from this point of deciding to be a self-organizing system to the end of 2011, that there hadn't been a lot of, you know, general organizational as a whole space for rest and reflection. And it felt like that we were working frantically a bit without knowing why exactly. So that's what I would say the difference is. It relates a lot to purpose in the world, where it was like, oh, we really need to step back from this and evaluate it. And as we did that, I feel like there was not a lot of clarity about what was next. And so for me, that was the critical moment of realizing it's not just the people in the system that need a rest, but it's also the organization. And then the other piece that I would say was really important for me was looking at the relationships in the organization. So we can look at people as individuals, but if we look at the patterns and the way that people had been interacting and relating to one another, it felt like there were some pretty unhealthy patterns that had been kind of developed over time and formed into almost like organizational unspoken norms, I guess. And so that for me was really a huge piece of why this was so important. Just this needing to take a step back from those in order to break kind of patterns that weren't serving us anymore, if that makes sense.
So in a way, the individuals needed a rest, the relationships needed a rest, and the overarching system and its purpose, from the perspective of its purpose, needed a rest.
Yeah, and I think that rest and reflection also go together, you know. So it was like we knew we were moving into this phase of rest, and we also recognized, though, that there was this need to reflect, and that at some point in the future we will, what we're calling is we're going to be reaching out to the community in a listening out exercise to sort of see, okay, now that we've rested, what is called for now?
And how have you... what kind of reactions have you received from partners and donors, you know, once the decision was made and you made that public?
Yeah. In general, the response that we've gotten has been really positive. There's been a lot of kind of a feeling of empathy and sort of also a sense of people relating to that need, you know, like, oh, my organization could use a rest. So it's been pretty overall positive in terms of people's feedback. With the general public, it's been one thing, and I feel like we could have done a better job in terms of our communication with closer partners and things like that.
And how are you feeling personally?
It's funny because, you know, some of the most important decisions that I've made in my life personally were in situations where I felt that there actually was no other course of action. So, for instance, when I moved here to Oaxaca, it was like, there's nothing else to do. The only thing I can do is make this move, you know, physically. And I feel very much the same around this decision with Rakana. I feel that it was kind of the only right path. So I'm feeling really good about it. I mean, obviously, I don't have a job with Rakana. So it's a little bit strange that I would feel so positive about it and so healthy. But experiencing the dynamics, looking around and feeling the sense of confusion a little bit around like where we were headed, I really, really felt like it was the only decision to be made.
Did the organization ever consider dying as opposed to hibernation as an option, given that dying is part of, you know, the life cycle?
Yeah. There was a lot of skepticism and a lot of people saying, you know, is this just a dying that we are afraid to call a dying, to name it that? It was very hard for people to imagine, for some reason, this idea of going into a period, an undetermined amount of time of resting without any attachment to what was going to happen down the road, you know, without having a date or a form or even a process named for how we would come back in the spring. You know, we've been using this metaphor of the garden and what it would look like and who would be part of that. And for me, it was really an exercise, an invitation, you know, to sort of leap into the unknown without attachment. But it was really, really quite hard for a lot of people. And I think that, you know, there were some people who definitely feel like this is a death, and that without clarity about those things, about when, where, who, and to serve what purpose, you know, Rakana will return, that it, for all intent and purposes, it is a death. But there wasn't any conversation. There was never any conversation about it being a permanent closing. A lot of questions and a lot of skepticism about that, but we haven't had that conversation. And maybe we will. You know, I mean, I think it's still possible.
I think it's a really a very creative and inspiring decision to have made, and you know, opening up the possibility for other social purpose organizations to say that the two choices aren't just to kind of slog along as we are, or to just end everything that we're doing, but maybe there is this other kind of thing that we can do, which is to pause indefinitely and to reflect and to take some space and some rest and to see where that goes. And it seems to me it springs very much from kind of the core, your Rakana's core way of being in the world, which is one that we've really enjoyed getting to know and hear about. And you wrote yourself that this was one example of Rakana's approach that they've been taking, which is how to apply these principles of living systems not only to organizations in general, but to our organization, to Rakana itself.
I've always been captivated by this idea of expressive change that Organization Unbound has been talking about. We've been talking about it now for maybe 5 years. I think it creates sort of a magnetism around the organization where people really feel that what you're saying is in line with your actions in the world. And there's a sense of authenticity around that, that creates like this very interesting magnetic energy and really draws people in. So what I've noticed in my time with Rakana has really been that people always want to figure out, like, how can I be part of this? How can I connect to this? How can I integrate into this? You know, and one of the biggest challenges that I have, you know, been playing with over these last 7 years is really around how do we, because Rakana hasn't really developed a robust volunteer program. There haven't been a lot of ways for people to find, you know, that sweet spot between their needs and their interests and the needs and the interests of the organization, although there is all this energy. So one of my challenges and something that I think about all the time is how do we create what I call ports in our organizations where the individuals and other organizations that feel inspired by these ideas can connect in and offer something and also receive something back and create a sort of symbiotic relationship. But what I've noticed is really just people getting captivated by the organization.
I think that really resonates with what we've seen in other organizations that have that very deeply expressive intention anyway. And I don't know if I'd ever put it quite that way myself, but that they're attractive, you know, that they, mm-hmm. people are really drawn to them. And And I also like what you're saying then, that that raises a challenge for the organization. So we talk about it as this great thing that creates energy and impact, but at the same time, you know, the organization has to think, how do we make space for this? Do we make space for people coming in? What ways? What is? And for each organization, there may be different answers. You know, some could have hundreds of volunteers washing over them, and that would be great. And others are, need to be much more cloistered in their work and have to figure out how to negotiate that. So I like the way that you're thinking about that. For a final question, if another organization were starting to get the intuition that maybe it was time for them to take a reflective rest period, what is your 60 seconds worth of advice for them?
I think it was really important that we thought about what are the things that we need to preserve through this period of rest. So if we apply the living systems metaphor, and it's you know, we think about plants, and they definitely preserve something. They have a root system. They have certain nutrients that they're going to keep safe through that period of hibernation. And I'd say that that was really important. So we're preserving our 501c3 status, we're preserving the brand, and we want to preserve relationships with our learning partners that we've developed over the years. So I would say that's probably one of the most important things. Think about what it is that you want to preserve during the stillness and the quiet. And then the other piece that I would say is really important is just thinking about how you communicate what it is that you're up to, because a lot of people are going to suspect that it's a death. So how you talk with those that you're closest to in your closest circles about what you're up to, and think about good language that really describes the decision that you've made as an organization. Those are just a couple pieces of counsel that I might offer.
Well, thanks very much for talking with us about this, Erin, and for being so frank about it. I really see this decision as part of Berkana's work as just one more great example of Berkana taking a lead in the world in terms of exploring a whole different way of thinking about organizations. So in a sense, you're not taking a rest from your work. The rest that you're taking, the reflection that you're taking, is your work, and will cause other people and other organizations doing social purpose work to rethink many of their assumptions about how and what they're doing and what the rhythm of that work should be. So it's really exciting to see, and we're grateful for how much you guys share with the rest of the world about the processes and the thinking behind it, so that we can all benefit from it. So thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Erin.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.